This week on the podcast, we're not talking about video games. We're talking about movies. As we add our first game to the endless list of video game movies, as we watch Super Mario Brothers the movie on It So Bad. And welcome, Steve. Hello.
Hello, Mike.
Hello, Encore.
Hello, sir.
And welcome back, Tim, after a long hiatus.
Hello. Good to be back.
You were on an episode. What episode were you on?
Was it the Fortnite versus the PUBG? Infamous? I was going to say, was it the infamous Fortnite versus PUBG?
That one. And Tapper.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Oh, you were on Tapper?
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't realize that.
So you can subscribe.
Tapper.
Yeah, go on, Steve.
I was just gonna say Tapper has a special place in this podcast history.
It does. There was,
a wall.
There was a Tapper wall for a while. It's kind of diminished, but you can subscribe to this podcast on your iTunes, your Google Podcasts, your Stitcher, your Podbean, wherever you find your podcasts. And please also write a review. We do enjoy those. Those help the algorithm of finding us on these places. Supposedly, I don't really know or really care for that matter. Listen if you want to or if you don't. But nevertheless, follow us. Also follow us on social media at It's So Bad Pod. And email us if you have any questions. itssobadpod@gmail.com. But yeah, this week we're doing something different. We mentioned it last week in our episode. We are, for the year 2021 and into the future, once a month we're going to be adding a movie to a list of video game movies, and we're going to try to run through a lot of them. Maybe everyone,
all
eventually. Eventually. It's the endless list of video game movies.
According to Rotten Tomatoes, there aren't that many. There's only like 38 or something.
Yeah,
like
that list ends
video
pretty,
game movies.
Pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe there are more, but that was the list.
There are definitely more, but... And I think we're going to maybe even do eventually some animated movies, like the Street Fighter animated movie and like some Pokemon movies. But yeah, this is the endless list of video games where we talk about video games that we watched. And for the first one, we're going to be talking about the first ever video game adaptation, which was Super Mario Brothers, the movie, which came out in 1993, was a tremendous flop, was a budget nightmare and a loss for the studio that put it out. Had a budget of $50 million and a box office of $20 million. But it brought us Bob Hoskins as Super Mario. And also John Leguizamo as Luigi for some reason.
Drunk Luigi.
As Luigi Mario.
Luigi Mario. And it canonized. The only thing I think it added to canon in Mario games, and we can talk about this, is the fact that Mario is named Mario Mario. And is that actually canon? I don't.
I mean, I think it's canon now.
But yeah, so we watched this movie together. What are some of you guys' initial thoughts on it?
It was that setup that you gave about it being kind of a flop and box office failure and costing more money than it brought in. It's probably going to be a theme for a lot of these movies that we talk about
on most
the podcast going forward. Video game movies. Yeah, video game movies are somewhat cursed. But I remember this is the first time I've ever seen this movie, and I remember hearing about it as a kid, and I have like a very distinct memory of a kid describing it to me like at a locker when I was like in elementary school, and I was like, whoa, that movie sounds crazy, and then I never saw it. And it was a bad movie, but it was also like entertaining and weird and like early 90s edgy as shit in a way that like I kind of expected, but like was really kind of satisfying to watch, especially with like you guys, like we were all giving our commentary as we went along.
Right.
So I was into it. I mean, it's a weird movie, and I don't know who wanted that out of their Mario Brothers movie.
I mean, it is a bad movie, but it is certainly an entertaining one. Like throughout the whole movie, there's not many lull moments throughout it, but the only thing that even has anything to do with video games is like there's like a handful of references to the video games. There, other than that, it just goes completely off the rails.
I mean, this movie probably taught me one of life's most important lessons, that no matter how difficult the challenge is that you're facing, it can be solved with plumbing in some form or another.
And maybe when things look darkest, a weird mushroom king will hand you a bomb. You can use that bomb to solve all of your problems.
Or a mushroom for a shield. Like we do in the video games constantly.
Or a trampoline fungus. It's a very strange movie. I'll also say this just at the outset, before we really get into discussing like the details of this movie. I really think that this movie is the reason why video game movies sucked for so long, because this movie kind of flopped and people weren't willing to invest the money into video game movies for a really long time, because they were like, well, probably this movie and Street Fighter the movie led them to think that if we adapt a video game, it's going to do pretty bad, because... Well,
I think there was a couple that were in production with the same studio, and they were just immediately like cut funding after this was released.
That does make sense.
Yeah.
It's weird too, because they tried to be like kind of creative with it. Like, this is almost like an early 90s like street crime movie to an extent.
Yeah.
Like, with like Mad Max, like dystopian kind of.
Right. Yeah. Like, it's kind of got like some Escape from New York stuff going on. And like, I don't know. It's very dystopian. And like Batman too. And it definitely has like the zaniness of a video game, but it has nothing really to do with. It's like they were like, all right, we're going to take Mario and we're just going to like transplant it onto early 90s New York crime to a certain extent. And so like I guess that's kind of creative what they tried to do. It wasn't what I would have expected. But like, you know, looking back on it all these years later, like, I don't know. I don't know if that was like a good thing that they tried to be creative, or if it was a bad thing ultimately. Like, if they had just tried to make like a straightforward Super Mario Bros. Movie, like set in the Mushroom Kingdom universe,
right,
the way the games are, would that have been better? I don't know.
Well, I think either the studio or Nintendo wanted them to make that kind of movie, like for kids, and they want, and like the director's, Morton and like Jenkel.
Yeah, Morton and Jenkel.
They just wanted to go like a different, like dark route, like geared more towards adults. It seems.
It's really weird. Really
but
weird.
But still have all those kids. Yeah.
Because the audience for video games at the time was totally adults. So just adult it up. But I think, you know, just to talk about the production of this movie for a second, I think the reason why this actually happened as a movie was because of a couple things. So Batman in the 90s was in the 80s was huge. What Tim Burton did for Batman and made it into like a dark adult thing, it made a ton of money. And then the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movie happened in 1990. It was the fifth highest box office of that year. And it kind of convinced people, I think, that video
Ninja
game
Turtles
movies.
Was?
Yeah. Wow. So it kind of convinced people that video game movies could be a thing and could be something they experiment with.
It did have a little bit of a Ninja Turtles 1 vibe. Like it felt like they were trying to force.
Definitely.
Force the Mario skin onto a Ninja Turtles movie. What I remember of that.
Yeah, and so
the
producer of this movie, he approached Nintendo, and I guess they like met for 10 days or something like that, and he was meeting with Minoru Arakawa, who was at the time the son-in-law of Hiroshi Yamauchi, who was the president of Nintendo. Arakawa would actually become the president of Nintendo after Yamauchi, but he was working with him, and they convinced Nintendo that Nintendo was like, we got an audience in America and we don't really know what to do with it, so here, you can have the Mario rights. And they only sold the rights to Mario for $2 million. That's pretty
wild,
pretty low,
right?
For that movie. But yeah, so then they went off to the races and tried to make this movie. And so the big thing about this movie is that the production behind the scenes to make this movie was fucking wild. They had
like legendarily
Just like setting some stakes here. So the original script was written by Barry Morrow, who won an Academy Award for Rain Man. He was writing a more serious drama about Mario, who was kind of shepherding Luigi through life, and Luigi was kind of more this like slow person who might have had mental problems, and so they called this
so Rain Man, he was writing another version of Rain Man.
So the people who were working on the project called the script Drain Man. So they commissioned a second script by this guy named Jim Gendwine and another gentleman by the name of Tom Parker, who brought a more vivid feel to it, and they were kind of trying to evoke the Wizard of Oz, which seems kind of maybe more in line with the video game. I'd like to read that script. But then they were like, nah, they were actually attached to work with the original director of the movie. And the original director was supposed to be a guy by the name of Greg Beeman, who worked on License to Drive. But because his movie Mom and Dad Save the World failed, they took him off the project. So do you guys remember Mom and Dad Save the World at all?
No, I don't think I've ever heard of that.
It's a really bad movie.
I feel like I've seen it, but I don't remember it at all.
It had a really wild aesthetic. I'm trying to remember the name of the main actor. It was the principal from Ferris Bueller was the dad.
Oh.
And John Lovitz was Emperor Todd Spengo. And they like go to some planet to save the world, and it's really bad. It's fun to watch now. It's like a good bad movie. But yeah, so Greg Beeman had done License to Drive, then he did Mom and Dad Save the World. He failed, so they took him off. The producer took him off the project. Then they approached Rocky Morton and Annabelle Jankel, who did Max Headroom, and also, which is a TV show. Has anybody ever seen Max Headroom?
I've never heard of it.
I have not.
Nope.
Max Headroom was pretty cool. Pretty futuristic, dystopian, like kind of cyberpunky 80s TV show with like... I don't know if you remember those like Energizer commercials, I think they were, with the rubber faces on the family. But that's where that comes from Max Headroom. Do you remember that stuff?
That sounds terrifying. You guys, I don't remember.
You guys might be too...
No, I have no concept of
you
that.
You guys might be too young for that.
sorry, Mike.
But you're older than us. They also worked on a movie called DOA, which did not that great, but I think it was a smaller movie.
That was their only movie, too, I think. Only other
right.
movie, right?
Yeah. Right. And so they came up with the concept of Dino Hatton, and they brought on another two more script writers, Parker Bennett and Terry Runte, who were trying to do a Ghostbusters in quotes, a Ghostbusters thing, which was funny, but also dark and weird. And that sounds like, you know, maybe that could be a Mario Brothers movie, but no. That script was thrown out for a fourth script, which was written by Dick Clement and Ian LaFrenaise, who were brought on to deliver a more adult and quote-unquote feminist tone to the movie. And so they expanded the roles of Daisy and Lena and also introduced Bertha as a character in that rewrite. But this is all to say, and even after that rewrite, they brought on script doctors to help with the script. And then while they were shooting the movie, they not only changed lines like every fucking take, but they also ad-libbed a ton of it. So I was reading something, the guy who played Spike, so Icky and Spike are two characters in this. They're trying to chase after Daisy and are like henchmen of King Koopa. They basically ad-libbed all of their lines in this movie, which is, this movie is just fucking wild.
I like, do think that they did add a little bit to it, though. I mean... especially once they were like evolved even more.
Yeah.
I think they
revolved.
Yeah. Yeah. So they were revolved.
Right. Right.
I thought they were.
It's a revolve, Tim. It's a revolve.
They did well at it. And even that, I think, was originally they were supposed to actually be devolved. And then they kind of convinced them to change that to making them even smarter.
Oh, that's pretty cool. I didn't know that.
So, yeah, Morton and Jankel came up with the concept of Dino Hatton, which was very loosely based on Dinosaur World from Super Mario World, where they were like, oh, dinosaurs. And a lot of this whole movie feels like somebody who's writing the script read the manuals for all of the games, mm-hmm. and just like came up with it and didn't like play the games, maybe play the games for 15 minutes, but they just didn't understand it. I think there's also a big disconnect between the directors and the writing, because the director's vision was they wanted to have a wonderful parody of New York and heavy industry. We call it New Brutalism. Like, what? Who has that all quote in, when they're making a Super Mario Brothers movie?
All in the Super Mario Brothers movie. Yeah, exactly. This is wild. It's like, they just, everybody wanted to like get their hands in like the recipe here and try to create something different instead of like a Super Mario Bros. Movie.
And to your point about the constant like daily rewrites, Dennis Hopper was like in an interview was saying like, yeah, during the shoot he had no idea what was happening. He just went in and shot his scene, and to the point where he just, all he cared about is, as long as it doesn't affect my character, he just would just charge through it.
Yeah, there's a famous like quote from the guy who plays Iggy. I'm trying to look up his name right now. His name is not Iggy, from the guy who plays Spike, Richard Edson. He was like, he's given a bit of an oral history behind the scenes of this. And one of the things he said was that there's a scene towards the beginning of the movie where King Koopa's in his like big executive suite in Koopa Tower, which is the Twin Towers, because it's like supposed to be an analog to New York City, in Dino Hatton. And he like flipped out on the directors so much to the point where the directors were like, yeah, everybody go to lunch. And then they fought for like another 3 hours after that. Where they were just yelling at each other and screaming at each other about the lines and the direction, and how Dennis Hopper was basically like, you guys are fucking amateurs. This is terrible. Why are you handing me new scripts every fucking 5 minutes? And like, that guy has some great lines. He also said like behind the scenes, Bob Hoskins was looked at as like a big actor at the time because he was in a bunch of shit. He was in he had just been in Who Framed Roger Rabbit. He had been in Hook and a bunch of other movies. So
yeah, who's he in Hook?
He's like Hook's
he's
right.
Shmi.
Is
yeah,
Mr. Shmi?
Yeah.
Oh shit.
Yeah.
Oh fuck, you're right.
So he was like revered to the staff, but he was like drunk every day that they were on set, and I guess he like, whenever he wasn't on set, they bought everybody, or they rented everybody houses, because this was filmed in like North Carolina, houses on the water, and he would just sit at home all day. And I guess the guy who played Spike approached Bob Hoskins one day and was like, "Hey, we got some weed. You want to come over?" And Bob Hoskins was like, "You motherfuckers have weed? And I've been sitting in my fucking rental for the last like 3 months all by myself." So that's great. But yeah, I mean, Bob Hoskins was cast primarily because of his body of work from Who Framed Roger Rabbit and Hook, but also because he was like a dead ringer for Mario. And that was like the one thing that Nintendo was like, hey, whoever you cast as Mario, he's got to look exactly like Mario.
Well, yeah, they tried to get Danny Nailed DeVito it. To direct and star in it, but he passed, which I think would have been a great fit.
Yeah, it probably would have been a better movie with him directing as well. But also, I guess Dustin Hoffman wanted to be Mario when he heard about the project, but Nintendo denied him because he didn't look enough like Mario.
Oh, yeah, that would have thrown me off the whole time. It's like, this guy doesn't even look like Mario. Shit.
And then also, they tried to get Michael Keaton and Arnold Schwarzenegger to play King Koopa.
Michael Keaton would have been an awesome King Koopa.
Yeah.
I'm just throwing that out
I
there.
Think, I, think
I agree. 100%.
Who was the other one? Oh, Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Yeah.
I thought it was. Also good, but Michael Keaton would have been like, you know, bring his unique brand of crazy to the table there. So that would have been sweet. Interesting all the like connection points between like Batman and like Hook and this movie, like in terms, and Roger Rabbit, like the early 90s cycle of actors that were out there in like kind of comic booky video game type, like fairy tale movies, like they all kind of like overlap a little bit. It's so weird.
Yeah, they also wanted to bring in also Tom Hanks to be in to be Luigi, but they saw a bunch of movies that failed and that he did. So in 89 he did The Burbs, Turner and Hooch, Joe versus the Volcano, The Bonfire of the Vanities, Radio Flyer. He was, and then they saw all that and they were like, yeah, we're not offering you this part, sorry. And then in 92 he was Jimmy Dugan in League of Their Own. He was in Sleepless in Seattle. The year in 93, he was in Philadelphia. In 94, he was in Forrest Gump. In 95, he was in Apollo 13. So they really whiffed on that one.
They like, he just happened to have like a down couple of years, and they were like, Tom Hanks isn't box office gold. We can't trust him.
That's fucking wild.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
he, a young Tom Hanks, I could, I mean, if they like did his hair up and maybe gave him a mustache or something, I could see him being a Luigi in this movie. Yeah. That'd have been, it'd be interesting.
Yeah.
Cause he was like, I mean, he's always like kind of a funny guy, but like he was definitely in like more kind of like frat boy party type movies early on.
Yeah. Like, you know,
what's that one movie? Is it Frat House or something?
No. What was that movie he was in? Fuck. I have his IMDb pulled up. Bachelor Party.
That's the one.
Yeah. So. Yeah, he was not, they whiffed on that one big time, but
I liked John Leguizamo in this role, though.
Yeah, I thought he was absolutely solid.
I thought he was a perfect casting right there, personally.
The funny part to me is that I feel like him and Mario have like equal time on the in the movie, and almost Luigi's like a more important character because he's the romantic interest.
Yeah, he's got the for sure.
He is the main character. Mario is the supporting cast at that point.
Well, like, Mario's the one that saves the day and everything.
It's about Luigi getting Daisy back. Mario is just like there to help.
It's really weird. Really weird. I don't know. I also don't know why they chose Daisy and not Peach. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, no Peach in this movie at all. That seems like a huge oversight.
I think Peach was the one that dropped her off at like the Catholic Church.
What?
I don't know about that.
Well, I remember we were saying that when we were watching it the other night. Like, maybe that was Peach, but I think that was us just drunkenly trying to fit Peach into the movie somehow.
Well, I feel like you have to have her. I mean, there's no way.
There's no way
was
they
Daisy,
didn't have her.
Was Daisy only in, like, one game at that point? Like, a Game Boy game?
Yeah. There might have been two at that point.
Like, how would you not have Peach who's in every game still?
Oh, yeah.
I don't fucking know.
Daisy's better than Peach, though, so that's fine.
This was just Daisy's jumping off point into the rest of the Super Mario world.
So, one last production note on this. So this was the entire movie was filmed. Well, most of the movie was filmed in the Ideal Cement Factory in Castle Hayne, North Carolina, which
that
is
makes
a five.
Perfect sense.
It was a five-story mega complex previously used in Terminator 2, as well as Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. The production designer was named David L. Snyder. Worked on Blade Runner and was known for his work on Blade Runner. So he wanted to build a intricate multi-level future city dominated by neon signs and metal walkways. And he wanted to create a gritty cyberpunk metropolis populated by tattooed bikers, gangsters, and strippers. Because nothing says Super Mario Brothers like tattooed bikers, gangsters, cyberpunk, and strippers. And they go to a strip club at one point in this movie, and it's like, what? What is happening?
And all the police officers drive like Mad Max style cars.
Yeah, and all the cars are powered by electricity and look like bumper
cars.
Look
like those little toys you like when you like roll them on the floor, they kind of spark a little bit. Like those are the motors in those cars.
And so the setup for this movie, and there's like an animated intro that looks terrible. I will say the actual
that was the best part.
the special effects in this movie are not that bad for the time period, but like the intro animated section, it looks terrible. And it's basically like, so a meteor hit Earth, it split the world into two different realities, one where primates evolved into humans and one where dinosaurs evolved into humans. Because again, nothing says Super Mario Brothers like a meteor hitting Earth and splitting reality into two different things.
I legitimately forgot that was the premise of the movie until you just said it just now. And we saw it, what, like 3 days ago?
So yeah, and I guess there was 20 years ago from present day time in the movie, a woman left a dinosaur egg at the foot of an orphanage. That dinosaur egg would turn into Daisy because that's how children come out of the womb as eggs in dinosaur land. Dino Hatton. But
you know, I'm not gonna lie. Until you just said that, I kind of just assumed that was Mario the whole time in that egg. But now, actually, I remember that Daisy's the one who's like the dinosaur person, and that makes perfect sense. But for some reason, I was just like, "Oh, it's Mario! Like it's Mario."
That
movie.
Shard.
So, like,
she needed that. Bowser needed that shard that she had for whatever reason.
This is a very easy to understand and clear plot, is what we're talking about here. Yeah.
So Daisy was brought into this world with a shard of the meteor, where the shard of the meteor can unite the two realities if she puts the shard back into the meteor. King Koopa wants to do that because Dinohattan is a fucking hellscape. Outside of Dinohattan, there's a desert and there's nothing. There's no resources. There's nothing. No one's got anything. There's fungus all over the fucking place. It's a terrible world. It's dystopia and it's dark. Dark as fuck and gritty.
That you need that shard to like be able to go back and forth through the realities. But didn't they like also set it up that there's a cave-in and that's why you couldn't go back? Like in the beginning, because whoever, maybe not Peach, was trying to go back in, or someone came and attacked her through it.
Well, so I think you need to be close to the meteor in order to activate that meteorite to go through the tunnel.
But she wouldn't have had that shard then at that point, because it's after she dropped off.
They did say at some point that like there was like a cave-in that blocked it off, and that like only more recently became unblocked because of whatever like the construction company that they were rivaling with. In our world, right, New York City, like somehow unearthed it and. Which is also kind of like...
What was that? Scaparelli?
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Scapelli?
Scapelli.
Scapelli.
Yeah.
Scaparelli. Oh, remember when they turned that guy into a monkey? Remember when that guy got turned into a monkey by an alien dinosaur man and everybody laughed?
Oh, yeah.
Like at a press conference?
No one laughed. That was fucked up.
Also, the Twin Towers...
Fuck that guy.
...were destroyed in that scene, too, which is kind of...
Oh, yeah, that was a little too soon.
You're also missing a crucial detail, is that he's de-evolved by a Super Scope 6, which was Nintendo's shooting peripheral at the time.
One of the few actual...
Devolved, you're right. He wasn't turned into a monkey, he was devolved into a chimpanzee.
But yeah, so we are introduced to Mario and Luigi, Mario and Luigi Mario, who are plumbers in New York City, who like literally, I think the only thing they think about day and night, well, especially Mario, is plumbing. This guy just fucking loves plumbing.
It's the consummate plumber, you know? Luigi Mario, on the other hand, is kind of the slacker of the two. Watch TV, playing video games, not cleaning up the coffee table and such.
He'll learn one day that plumbing is life.
Exactly.
Yeah. So he can fix any plumbing job, Mario. Luigi Mario, he can, you know, he's got some skills, but not as much as Mario.
He's the lover.
Right. And so the events are set into motion because...
What a ridiculous movie.
Yeah. The events of the movie are set into motion because Iggy and Spike, who are the henchmen of King Koopa, are sent to New York City to find Daisy and the meteorite. And the guy who plays Iggy is Fisher Stevens. You might also know him as Ben, the guy doing brown face in Short Circuit, and the Plague, who's the bad guy in Hackers. And he's still in a lot of good stuff. He's been in Succession. He's been in Vice Principals. He was on the Blacklist for a little while. So the guy's still kicking around.
It's nice to know that this movie didn't ruin his career. or the brown face in Short Circuit either. You know,
yeah.
He made it out of the early 90s unscathed.
But yeah, so this is a movie. The Mario and Luigi get dragged into Dinohattan. They have to rescue Daisy, who's the princess of, I guess. Do they ever call it the Mushroom Kingdom even?
No, it's just Dinohattan.
Yeah, I think that King Koopa makes some sort of reference to, like, he's like denigrating it when he's like making fun of the Mushroom King, and I feel like he's like, "Oh, your Mushroom Kingdom will never happen." Like, that's the only, and maybe I'm making that up, but he says something along those lines
when he's talking to the fungus. Yeah, I think you're right.
Right.
I think you're right.
Yeah, and I mean, in the Mushroom Kingdom, there's like a ton of Super Mario Brothers iconography. Like, they, when I say that, I don't actually mean that. What I mean is they take elements from Super Mario Brothers and they try to make them more real, I guess. So, like, for example, there is a bar called Thwomps. There is Ba-bombs that just are Ba-bombs from the game for some reason that you wind up and they blow up places and they just kind of appear everywhere.
The Shy Guys are like weird, like kind of kinky sex guys who work at the dump or something like that.
Yeah, random gimps.
They're the gimps that work at like the landfill.
They also like the police use flamethrowers that I think are supposed to be like a fire flower analog that just throw fire for some reason. Which is really weird. What else is there?
And then he picks up a mushroom from the king, but it doesn't make him like bigger or stronger or anything. It's a fucking shield.
He said, what does he say though?
It's like, I don't remember what he said. I can't remember that much.
Trust the fungus.
Trust the fungus.
Believe in the fungus. The fungus within you the whole time.
The Goombas. Oh my, the Goombas. And they,
oh yeah.
You could track who was turned into a Goomba based on like the color of the scales on their head. That was like their hairstyle.
Or if they had a harmonica.
Yeah, I was going to say, or if they had a harmonica, like Bob Dylan was turned into a Goomba.
Toad.
And still got his harmonica right there.
Yeah,
Toad was like a street performer, and that was Toad, and then he just turned right into a Goomba.
Yeah, so he's turned into a Goomba.
But he was Yoshi a delightful little helper, though.
Yeah. Yoshi's a velociraptor or something like that.
For some reason, Yoshi's like a mini velociraptor.
They did Yoshi dirty world. In this game. He was just like this slave pet and just chained to the floor and get stabbed.
He got stabbed. Yeah, what the fuck?
They almost murdered Yoshi.
Ugh.
Just like the video games. Just like
Hey, you know that scene in Super Mario where Yoshi gets stabbed in a
You gotta stab him to be able to ride him, to tame him.
But yeah, so eventually, you know, through shenanigans and hijinks, Mario and Luigi get to go to a strip club at one point where they do the dinosaur, and that's my favorite scene in the whole movie.
Oh.
Where they meet Bertha. And one thing I'll say about this movie, like, there's a couple things this movie has going for it. And one of the things is, obviously, the set design is really good for what it is. It makes no sense as a Super Mario Brothers movie, but the set design is really good. Also, the costume design is really good. Mm-hmm. And the music's pretty fucking good. So you get Walk the Dinosaur in that scene. It's dope as hell. Mario and Luigi will eventually get their iconic attire in this movie for some reason. Oh, because they want to get back to their plumbing roots, right?
Also, that was...
they needed plumbing uniforms if they were going
to... the directors were trying as hard as they could to not get them to wear their colors.
Yeah.
The yellow suit there was actually, that Mario wears.
There is... that's the reason you only see it in the last like quarter of the movie.
Luigi
there was like
was
a big controversy red. with the directors and the producers.
This is an origin story, you know. Like they can't wear their costumes right away; they have to become their characters.
But at that point, they had like five different outfit changes.
This movie is fucking insane.
Also, I have Big Bertha. To me, I don't know why, but her character just pissed me off every scene she was in.
MVP of the movie, though.
Yeah, she was great. I loved it.
They start dancing, and he's like clearly just like he pretends to motorboat her, but trying to steal a necklace that's the shard that she took.
No chemistry. No chemistry with Bob Hoskins either, because they kiss, and it's the worst on screen.
That is the worst kiss I have. Oh my god! Like, come on, try it again, guys. That was like they took one take.
And yes, she is Big Bertha, who in the video games was a fish that chased you and hunted you down in Super Mario Bros. 3, for anybody counting at home. So she was a character.
Here she's like a dominatrix that like beats up an old lady and then like flies away with her hover boots.
Oh man, remember the scene where she beat up an old lady? That was wild.
Yeah, that was fucking wild.
And then she stole the shard. Reason.
Well,
even like show them like trying to track her down, or did they just like happen to be at the same place?
They knew she was a bouncer at that club.
Yeah, that's so Iggy and Spike. Eventually. Yeah, Iggy and Spike brought them there because they turn after they get smart and they get evolved by the Bowser King Koopa.
And I think I have a problem with how fast she turns to his aid when.
Oh yeah.
You know, like they dance. He steals her necklace, and then she's like, "Yeah, we're cool, man."
Like, yeah. All of a sudden, like I tried to murder you earlier, and you know what? We're cool now, even though you stole my shit.
This world is really weird. The way people act in this world is, and how they like have interpersonal relationships, and how there's like people out on the street just like stealing shit in the front of like police officers. Everybody's like, yeah, whatever, happens all the time. It's fucking wild. I guess you're right though. You know, it's probably like an early '90s, late '80s, like New York, downtown New York City, thing where
crime
they're like
everywhere.
Looking up. Yeah.
There, that one dude. There, a couple of those dudes tried to straight up take the egg out of like the stroller, and that one lady was like, "Don't take my baby!" And it's like, literally just pulling an egg out of it. Like, why were they trying to steal this lady's baby?
Yeah. Right?
It wasn't even like her purse or anything. What the fuck?
But yeah, so eventually, you know, Mario and Luigi save the day. I don't think we have to go into all of the gritty details behind it. I think we've touched on a lot, but the end credit scene has Daisy walking up to the Mario's home residence and like with burned out clothes and say, "You'll never believe what happened." And so it sets up Super Mario Brothers the Movie 2, which never happened.
Which we're still waiting on.
Yeah, might just be still in production.
And so, but now that we get into today, because of the flop of this movie, Nintendo did not make a live-action movie based on its properties until Pokemon Detective Pikachu.
Really? None of the other video games are Nintendo properties?
What was their involvement in, what was it, like the Wizard or whatever?
The Wiz?
The Wiz, that was it.
I don't know, they probably licensed the rights to use their game footage.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. They just like licensed shit out, that makes sense.
Yeah,
okay.
But like, yeah, there's never been like a live-action adaptation of their intellectual property until Pokemon Detective Pikachu. There's been like Pokemon animated movies, but yeah, they were like, fuck it. But
which I'm pumped to put that one on the list, let's just say. Does that qualify for the list?
What does?
Pokemon, the animated movie, the first movie.
I think so.
Is that a video game movie?
I think so.
Right. Yeah, okay. Definitely.
Nice.
But yes, but now they recently sold the rights to Mario to be in a animated movie that's coming out in 2022. Okay. It's being produced by Illumination Studios, who do Despicable Me, The Lorax, Minions, Secret Life of Pets, saying like that second tier animated studio, I think it's known as, Pixar.
That's straight up just like money maker, like guaranteed couple mil.
They make a ton of money. Like Despicable Me, all of those movies make a shitload of money.
Oh, yeah.
I think all of those properties combined made something like $7 billion.
Jesus.
For Universal Studios.
Damn.
And the guy who does all that, the producer, is Chris Mellon-Dandry, and he is also working, he's a co-producer for the Mario Brothers animated movie with Miyamoto, so it's like really involved by Nintendo, and also Nintendo has Super Nintendo World coming out in Universal Studios as well, so they got like a big deal together, and they want to make sure that movie like is an absolute hit, so they've got a lot of money behind this, and they're riding a ton of interest to get it out in 2022, and I'm curious if they're going to put another game out for that time period to go alongside all that stuff.
I feel like they would. You're leaving money on the table if you don't, I feel like, at that point.
Yeah. As I mentioned, you know, I think this movie's canon has been pretty much banished to the Phantom Zone by Nintendo.
It's really, for a bad movie, it's good. You know what I mean? Like, it's
a good, bad movie.
It's not just like, it wasn't boring to watch. Like, it wasn't like you were 20 minutes in, like, looking at your watch to see how long
it really,
it's been.
it really owns how bad it is. You know, like they were all on this concept and they were like, fuck you. This is our movie. Donald Trump is King Koopa. New York is in fire. Dinosaurs are people. Peach isn't here. And here's our movie.
Yeah. Yoshi's a slave.
Slave.
Exactly. And they just, they own it the whole way through.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in future episodes, we'll be adding this to the list. This will become our number one game, because we don't have to rank it.
This is setting the standard from now on.
But,
our number one game movie.
But I do...
Game hyphen movie.
I do genuinely think that this movie will end up being, like, solidly middle tier of our list. Like, it might be, like, upper two-thirds or upper third. But
I feel
it's like
upper third, yeah.
Yeah, it's not like it's definitely not the worst video game movie.
Well, there's a lot of like
by a long shot.
There's definitely a few that I've seen video game movies specifically that are hard to get through.
Yes.
To say. Yeah. When this doesn't have that feel at all.
This was a joy to watch.
Yeah.
There was a lot of video game movies that had like a production budget of like $1 million.
Right.
And there's a lot of Uwe Boll movies and Paul W.S. Anderson movies that maybe aren't that great. Looking at you, Resident Evil movies. And looking
at you. But that OG Resident Evil movie is legit, though, all right? So I haven't seen...
We'll see. We'll
come
see.
In the pantheon of video game movies.
But yeah.
I'm not saying it's great.
As we've said, I think it's very entertaining, but... Like one of the things we'll be, I think, we'll in the future when we talk about ranking is like, does this kind of align with the canon established in video games? Does this take elements from the video game and use them successfully in a movie? And this movie does not whatsoever do. They just take the names and not they just did whatever the it. Fuck they wanted with it. So, yeah. So this is welcome. This is the endless list of video game movies, and hopefully in 2021, this expands a lot. But yeah,
I'm ready for the next one.
The next one we'll announce right now is what we typically do with video games. So we've decided that the next one for January, which you'll see in another 4 weeks, is Street Fighter the Movie.
Yeah. All right.
The Raul Julia and Jean-Claude Van Damme. Vehicle. We'll be discussing its impact on video game movies, and that movie also has a tremendous oral history that I'm excited to have you guys read before we talk about this. So, yeah, awesome. we'll be back next week with a video game, and that video game will be our holiday video game, and we have an annual tradition around these parts with It So Bad, and so next week we'll be adding Home Alone once again to the endless list. It will be the Genesis version of that game, and we'll bring that to you next week right before the holidays. But thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Encore.
Thank you, sir. It's a pleasure.
And thank you, Tim, for coming on.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me.
And we'll be back next week with another episode. Goodbye.